is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Larry Harstein for Chris Carlin, 1-800-919-3776. Also on Twitter, at Hardesty ESPN, at ESPN NY 98 underscore 7 FM. Glad to be with you. Got a couple of guests for you this evening. In about a half hour, we'll be joined by Scott Burnside from The Athletic had an excellent article on the NHL and social justice. This came out yesterday. And it's fascinating because they must have read his article because the NHL canceled their playoff games today and tomorrow. Otherwise, because we were scheduled to have game three of the Islanders and Flyers in this time slot today, right? But because of the cancellation in support of what athletes are speaking out about police brutality in this country. So the NHL has canceled 2 days. So we'll talk to Scott Burnside about that. And a little later in the show, around 9 o'clock, Christy Ackert will join us from the Daily News, and we'll get her update on what's happening with the Yankees, who have hit some troublesome times here, running into a Tampa squad that, cleaned their clock a little bit. And then the doubleheader loss to Atlanta yesterday, day off today. And of course, tomorrow they're scheduled to have a pair of doubleheaders on Friday and Sunday and the single game Saturday as they face the New York Mets in the Subway Series. And ironically, the Mets are where we're going to begin tonight on Carlin here on 98.7 ESPN. Last night after the show, I watched Dom Smith, who was in agony. I watched Dom Smith bare his soul into the disappointment, the hurt of what our topic has been over the past 24, 48 hours, right? Which is the situation with Mr. Blake in Wisconsin being shot in the back 7 times. And just the pain and just the suffering that he had, the tears rolling down his eyes. And how he explained that he was not there yesterday, that it was hard for him to focus, but he was out there. He was doing his best, and he'll be out there today. As you heard at the top of the hour, Sports Center, there are 6 games that have been postponed in Major League Baseball today. Colorado at Arizona, Oakland at Texas, Boston at Toronto, Philadelphia at Washington, Baltimore at Tampa Bay, and Minnesota at Detroit. As a Met fan, I would have liked that my team would have been one of those who worked with the Marlins to cancel. Now, I understand logistically, it would be tough for a Marlins team that has a number of games that they have to make up because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So I get that. It's a little tougher. It's a little tougher than it is in the NBA and the NHL because of the fact that those were 3 games in a day. Now, other baseball teams have done it. I acknowledge that. But I do understand the Marlins have been in a really tough place because of their handling and their issues with COVID-19, that they've had so many games canceled. I don't know, because the Mets really haven't announced that they're going to play or not going to play. I mean, the manager didn't speak. In watching SNY before hitting the air, they've never seen the lineup card. And I don't know whether Dom Smith is in the lineup tonight or not. I see him right now standing on the top step of the dugout talking to his teammates. I know based on how he was last night, I would think that maybe he wants to get back on the field. I don't know. But part of me as a Met fan wanted my team to stand up and show support. Now, maybe they could have, maybe they wanted to and they didn't. I don't know. Once again, I understand the scenario with the Marlins. But then there was this thing that Chris and Peter were talking about, where apparently somewhere in Citi Field, there was a mic and a camera rolling, okay? Not just a microphone open, but a microphone open and a camera rolling. Listen to what was said.
They're mulling that over. Baseball's trying to come up with a solution, saying, "No, you know, it'd be super powerful." Three of us here can't leave this room. Miss Dana, you know, it'd be really great if you just have them all take the field. Then they leave the field. And then they come back and play at 8:10. And I was like, "What?
What's it?"
Rob. "Because Jeff's scheduling is going to be a nightmare. There's so much at stake." And I said, "Jeff, that's not happening.
They're not dealing with reality.
They're not playing, but that's Rob's instinct. And Rob, not exactly what you're talking about, at leadership level, he doesn't get it. He just doesn't get it." And
that's so...
Anyway, so we're waiting. Jeff wants to hear, as soon as we hear from the Marlins, whatever we do, we need to coordinate with the Marlins. So as soon as Conforto hears from Rojas, right, Miguel Rojas?
Yeah.
Now, this appears to be Brody Van Wagenen having a conversation. Okay, we don't know who the other people are. And here's the thing. Once again, apparently this is Brody. Baseball is trying to come up with a solution. You know what would be super powerful? You know, and then he says, "Look, just between us, you can't leave the room. It would be really great if you just have them all take the field, then they leave the field, and then they come back and play at 8:10. Now, the game's supposed to start at 7:10. And once again, I think this is Brody. This is what you just heard. I was like, "What?" And then when asked who the suggestion came from, he said, "A man named Rob." Now, obviously, the assumption would be that that's baseball commissioner Rob Manfred. And then the man continues. Now, this says, he goes, "Jeff," now this is believed to be, thinking obviously it's Wilpon. Jeff, scheduling is going to be a nightmare and there's so much at stake. And I said, "Jeff, that's not happening today. They're not playing, but that is Rob's instinct," said the man. "That leadership level doesn't get it." So, first of all, maybe this makes sense to you, but I'm trying to figure out, why would they come on the field at 7:10, leave, and then come back at 8:10? So what are they supposed to be doing for this hour? Are they in the clubhouse, you know, playing cards? I mean, what are they doing? And the Mets are taking the field led by Dom Smith. And so what is going on? What the heck is happening here? And most importantly for me, why put on a show? Either you postpone the game or you don't. Don't play games. This is not a game playing scenario. These athletes who are taking a stand, are taking this very seriously. As I said last night, these athletes in the NBA that started this, these athletes in the WNBA who continued it, these players in Major League Baseball who sat, they're doing this for a reason. They're using their platform to say, this needs to stop. Playing games, getting on and off the field, coming on at one time, leaving, and then coming back on another time is not, this is no joking matter. We're not playing with people's emotions here. This is serious business. People's lives are at stake and have been. So I'd rather you just say, you know what? Because of whatever the situation is, if you feel strong enough and you do not want to participate in the game, that's okay. All right? If that's how you feel, that's okay. Now I'm looking, and both dugouts have emptied, and they're standing alongside. All the Marlin players are standing in front of their dugout. All the Mets players are standing in front of their dugout. And all the players now have their hats off. And, they're taking a moment. The Mets are on the field, and everybody's taking a moment. And so, for me, as I said, don't play games here. This is not a joking matter. We're not trying to put on an image. We're not trying to, well, let's make it seem like, no. This is too important. We're not trying to make it seem like anything. Either you postpone the game, both teams decide that that's what you're going to do, or as an individual player, if that's what the team has decided, and you don't want to play, you don't play that game. It's simple. as far as I'm concerned. And the fact that I don't know whether this was an official video, I don't know whether this was something that was about, I don't know. But after the moment of silence that lasted 42 seconds, okay, the teams have left the field. So maybe this means they've postponed it. It looks as though that the Mets and Marlins become the seventh game that will be postponed tonight in Major League Baseball because of their acknowledgement of what needs to change as far as social justice is concerned. And that is an acknowledgement. And let me say this before I get to the calls. Nobody is naive enough to think that because what's been done in the NBA and what's been done in the WNBA and Major League Baseball and the NHL and MLS had some games canceled as well, and tennis that canceled the tournament, postponed the tournament dates for a couple of matches for a couple of days, that now that's the cure. Okay, everything's good. Racism is done. Nobody is that naive. Okay, nobody. But it is a step in the direction to show that professional athletes who have leverage are trying to use their platform to make sure that owners of teams, administrators of leagues, commissioners, and so forth, are able to use their influence with sponsors and with politicians to get things done. It is no surprise that when teams want to buy and have new stadiums built, I don't think they have to go through the same type of permits that you have to go through when you want to add a deck onto your home. I don't think so. And so that's the type of leverage you need if you want to see things changed from a legal standpoint. Okay? That's how it's done. So I think that's part of the reason that you're seeing. That's why, while we believe the NBA games will resume Saturday, that's not a done deal yet, because that's why the players and the league are making their discussions, because obviously the players have to decide what they want and put. And here's the thing I hope they're doing, and add a time period before they need to see some kind of change to get it done. Because listen, they could just yes you to death. Oh, look, okay, just get him back on the court. Just get him back on the court. Yeah, okay, just get him back to playing baseball. Yeah, okay, just get him back on the tennis court. Yeah, okay. No, it's not what we're trying to do. So that's what's important about this. That's why for me, when we were just played that audio that appeared to be from Brody Van Wagenen having the conversation with somebody in the Mets organization about this stunt of having them come on the field at 7:10 and then leave and come back at 8:10. And I'm like, well, why would you come back at 8:10? And they came on the field. They stood, hats off over their hearts. Okay, both teams, Mets and Marlins, they stayed out for 42 seconds, obviously acknowledging Jackie Robinson's number, 42, and left a Black Lives Matter t-shirt at home plate. And as I said to you in the open, I was disappointed. I would like that my team that I root for would be one of those who take this seriously enough that they would say, okay, we can postpone our game for one day so people can have the conversation of, okay, I'm not watching baseball. Let's see what do I need to do. This is serious enough that players are making a sacrifice. Because how often do we talk about how selfish players are and that they're only thinking about themselves? How often do we say that? A lot, right? A lot. And of course, there's some on Twitter who are like, you sure they're coming? They're not coming back at 8:10? I love you, baby. And if it's quite all right, I need to, baby. Being Larry Hartstein for Chris, who's been in on the K-Show all week with Peter Rosenberg, doing a great job from 3 to 7. Earlier, they played it on the K-Show, and I played it at the start of this show about some audio that it appeared as though that Brody Van Wagenen was having a conversation in a room where the mic was hot and the camera was rolling, which nobody knew. And they were talking about, you know, possibly moving the game or starting at 7:10 and going off the field and coming back at 8:10. And there was some confusion. Well, general manager Brody Van Wagenen has issued a statement. Quote, and I'll get to the calls in a second. Jeff Wilpon called Commissioner Manfred this afternoon to notify him that our players voted not to play. They discussed the challenges of rescheduling the game. Jeff proposed an idea of playing the game an hour later. This is Brody Van Wagenen speaking, I misunderstood that this was the commissioner's idea. In actuality, this was Jeff's suggestion. The players had already made their decision, so I felt the suggestion was not helpful. My frustration with the commissioner was wrong and unfounded. I apologize to the commissioner for my disrespectful comments and poor judgment in inaccurately describing the contents of his private conversation with Jeff Wilpon. So that's from general manager Brody Van Wagenen. Let's go back to the phones. 1-800-919-3776. Javi's in the Bronx. Hey, Javi, you're next on Carlin.
Hey, how you doing, Larry?
What's up,
good
Javi?
Evening, good evening, brother. How you doing, man? I haven't spoken to you in a while.
It's been a minute, man. Where you been?
I used to call you. Yeah, I know. But ever since that, because I used to call you at 10 o'clock when I used to get my wife from work.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when I used to call you. But, Larry, I'm glad you're well. I hope your family's fine. I hope everybody's healthy.
We're doing great. Hope the same for your family.
Thank you, brother. I'm going to say something, Larry, that may strike some controversy, but I'm going to have to say it. Listen, This is my point of view. What happened, well, as far as what happened in Wisconsin is definitely a tragedy. It should not happen. It's just wrong. There's no other way to look at it. It's wrong. But as far as the NBA and everybody, you know, stopping work. For example, you and I cannot stop work. You have to go to work every day, right? Unless you're ill or, God forbid, something happens, you have to go to work every day. Mm-hmm. I have to go to work every day. I cannot not go to work. So I have to go to work every day. And I know it's for a greater cause. But here's the situation, right? I wonder, right, in Wisconsin, on August 12, a little girl by the name of Anissa Scott got shot and killed by a black teenager called Jerry L. Ward. He's a 17-year-old boy, a teenager. He was shooting into a crowd, and he shot into a car to kill someone that was in the car. He didn't know that the little girl was right next to him. She died. She was 11 years old. So why the NBA didn't stop for that? Why it happened in Madison, Wisconsin, in Wisconsin, okay? Why the NBA didn't stop in protest of crime, of inner-city crime? That was an 11-year-old little girl who's never going to go to the farm. She's never going to get married. She's never going to have kids. She's dead. You understand? Why they didn't protest that? But they're going to protest, this gentleman getting killed? Let's look at it this way,
Javi. I absolutely do. And let's have some perspective on it. And stay with me on this. We've got two separate discussions here, Javi. The discussion that you're giving me is what to do about black-on-black crime, white-on-white crime, Latino-on-Latino crime, Asian-on-Asian crime. That's a discussion.
That's a discussion. I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to tell you something, Larry, and it's not an opinion. It's not. This is a fact. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm a black Latino. No one does more harm on us than us.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fact.
Absolutely. There's no question.
That's a fact. So before we go out, let's police ourselves first. Let's talk about the inner city crime that's going on in our communities. They protested this man who, by the way, had a criminal record. It doesn't excuse what happened to him. No one deserves that. But this little girl was an innocent little child. And that's gone under the radar. Why Kenny Smith didn't walk out from the studio?
Well, the other reason, and once again, stay with me on this now. So that's a different discussion. When we're talking about this police brutality thing, this is a situation that Javi was on video. And Javi, you and I both know this is not the first time that's happened. This has been going on for a long time before we had video. And so now when you see right. what's happening in this stand with this stand, this is this conversation. And that's where the NBA is standing, and that's where the NHL is standing, and the NFL, right. and so on and so forth. So that's the discussion we're having here. But what I'm saying to you is it's two different discussions, but the right. other discussion should be held also. We need to have the conversation, and there have been players. Thanks for the phone call, my friend. Good talking to you. Got to move on. There have been players who have gone back to their cities and have gone back to their communities and have gone back to talk to folks about what needs to be changed in their personal communities. So they're doing that also. Okay? So got to let you go, Javi, because you're on a delay and it's kind of throwing me off. So, you know, you're right. That needs to be discussed too, and players are handling that. But this, because this was videoed, and has a bigger view because it was on video, that's what we're dealing with for the moment right now. It's possible that folks in Major League Baseball or the NHL, NBA, didn't know about that. Okay, it's possible. But it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. And yes, as I told the caller last night, we do need to address those situations because those are bad also. It's not that it's one against the other. It's just that for this one, because it was videoed and has such a broader base that was placed on all of social media, it jumps out at you. It grabs you. But yes, we have to have that discussion about what happens in our personal communities as well. Okay. And we can have them at the same time. You know, we can. And maybe the adjustments that the players in various leagues are trying to get through the teams and the leagues to change things, maybe that will be the jumping off point to help in both issues. Ronald's in Queens. Hey, Ronald, you're next on Carlin.
Hello, Larry. You got me?
Yeah, I got you, Ronald. What's happening?
I was on the line, man. I appreciate you, man. Your platform. I want to discuss, you know, my father's 91, right? He was a first grade detective.
Wow, God bless him.
He worked the worst precincts. He came out of a Fort Apache in the Bronx, then he was transferred into Harlem, the 32nd precinct, then worked homicide out of the 25th.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, he had to join the Guardians, right? The Guardians Association was a black organization that protected black police officers. Now, what I'm trying to say is that, man, you know, they had a shooting. There was a cop. He was getting off at night, late at night. This was recent. It wasn't recent. It's been a while, but he was getting off at night. Somebody was breaking. He just got off a tour in Harlem, and he went, and somebody was breaking into his car. And when he went, he was killed and shot dead in the street. Mm-hmm. So my point is, man, even black police officers out of uniform are at risk. They know there's a systemic problem. There's always has been. I got an uncle that went out on a disability in 1947. In Harlem River houses, he had a beak there, a black beak there. They didn't give those beaks back then. They didn't give black cop police there.
Mm-hmm.
They had another incident where a guy was shot in front of his wife in the front seat of the car. And they still are fighting the cause. If it doesn't come from the top, we got to fight on our hands. We got to cut. They still haven't addressed this. I've heard the convention. I've heard the Republic. He never took a stand and said that we're going to stop this in the United States of America. We're not going to have people shooting brothers in the back. That's not the first one. We've got too many. I lost count.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is that if police officers aren't safe, you know, we were two brothers who came up in the Bronx, and my father said, be careful. Don't wear no jewelry. Back then it was a stocking cap. Don't wear no stocking cap. Have your hands out. Don't make no moves. And he taught us that, man, because he knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So we're going on and on.
And you know what, Ronald? Here's the sad fact, Ronald, and thanks for the phone call. We're having that same conversation today. We're having the same conversation today. The stocking cap has become a do-rag. But we're having the same conversation 10, 15, 20, 25 years later. Jay's in Brooklyn. Hey, Jay, you're next on Carlin.
Hi, how you doing? I was just listening today. And it was a little disturbing to hear the word, like, you know, if you just obey the law. Da, da, da. I'm actually an officer stationed in Brooklyn. I went to go visit my mother, actually, yesterday. And she doesn't live in the best of neighborhoods still. But, you know, she's comfortable there. So anyways, I went to go visit her, and I actually got pulled over. Really? And, you know, for a second, you know, I think just being a black man in Brooklyn, you know, you still have that taboo about trying to do everything right to not get the repercussions of other people. Like, I know I'm an officer, and there's been times where I keep my hands on the wheel, and officer be talking to me, be like, yo, why do you still have your hands on the wheel? You're on the job. But you still get that sense of fear when it comes to the police that other cultures can't relate to. It's shown statistically by what happens to black men when they interact with police, and it's still happening. Like, and I completely understand why Jimmy Butler chose not to have his name on a jersey, not have a name on a jersey, because, you know, if he didn't play for the Heat, he could be in the same compromising situation. And to me, the most disappointing thing about it is that, like, you know, people do this Blue Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. It's you have people on the job who are of color who are afraid to say Black Lives Matter because they'll be shunned by other officers. You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, it's about support. Like, if someone that I worked with, or if someone that I was friends with felt a way that they were gay or lesbian and they felt oppressed about something, why wouldn't I support that person? And it's just sad that, you know, organizations such as the NHL who have black players can't even take a moment to give the spotlight to a movement that's been going on since forever, but has been really getting spotlighted in March. But everyone's upset about, oh, the players don't want to play. But if they're on the street, you wouldn't care about their life if they were shot by the police. So it's just kind of upsetting to even hear people really upset that people don't want to play a sport for one day. I just don't get it. I try to understand it from both perspectives, but it's just sad, especially when, you know, people who are victimized by the police, now their rap sheet pops up on the internet and they're criminalized because, oh, well, maybe the guy did have a knife. Okay. The officer was pulling his shirt. You could attack. He was walking away from you. You had three officers with you. You could attack with him. You could have tased him. You could have did anything to subdue that man. Instead, you waited and shot him seven times in the back. Yeah. Like, it's certain things that you do in those situations. And to me, he wasn't an immediate threat. So why would you use deadly physical force?
Jay, you're the perfect person to ask this as a police officer. So I got two questions. First of all, what was the response from the officer when he found out you were a fellow officer?
Oh, he wasn't even, his response was well warranted. I think that what I will say is that NYPD does handle those situations very well. I can't speak of other states or other, like other states or other counties, like Long Island, for instance. I can't say how they would handle that situation, but, you know, he was very professional about it. You know, it was more so my feeling that threw me off.
I hear you.
Because it's like I'm sitting on my shield. My shield is in my back pocket.
Yeah.
So now if he sees me, what kind of officer, as soon as he sees me reaching for something, you know what I mean? Some officers are on edge with everything that's going on. Some officers are just on edge around black people in general. And that's the truth. So, you know, he was very professional, but I mean, most officers are going to sit on their shield, having a lap. I happen to sit on mine. So that motion of me sitting, reaching for my shield could have been a different kind of officer automatically making an assumption and it being a completely different situation. And even that I had to think about as I was reaching for my shield. I still have my work pants on is the craziest part.
Wow. Jay, and thanks for the phone call. Really, I appreciate you checking in. It's a feeling. It's a feeling like no other. I just got to tell you, it's a feeling like no other. Buddha's in the Bronx. Hey, Buddha, you're next on 98.7.
Uncle Larry, what's going on, big bro?
What's up, Buddha? How you doing?
Oh, boy, got some interesting callers, boy. Very interesting. I mean, oh, my goodness. You know, my father, you know, God rest his soul, Pop Dukes, he was in the Forgotten War, you know, Korean War. And if he was able to be alive and call, you'd hear some very unique perspective on what the flag and things meant to him. Being in a war at that time as a black man, you don't know what kind of nonsense he went through. That's number one.
Yep.
Number two, you got this stuff about this guy talking about, like, that people need to obey. Yo, listen, man, Breonna Taylor was a house man in the couch sleep, huh? Mm-hmm. Like, what arm or whatever did she raise before she got shot? I don't want to even hear that nonsense. It's so old and tired. It's the same way when everybody, the guy calls, you hear this prelude and 1,000 points just to get to the last point we said. You know, mm-hmm. I'm biased. Like, start there. Let's not go through all that other nonsense that we're going through. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm glad the NBA players are playing because I think the pause was good and all that. But one thing we got to do as people of color, we can't let people take this money out of our pocket. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't help you. That doesn't help you at all. Then number two, if you're not playing, you're going to have some guys who know how to handle that situation. Like Jaylen Brown, what he was saying was 100% true. Some guys are going to know how to be out there on that front line, and the other guys are going to be lazy and get themselves in stuff that they don't need to get into. So I was glad that transpired.
Yeah.
But, you know, talking about these issues, you know, it's Trey said it, and I heard the anger in his voice, and you go there. And then, like the Sarge said, that called you. You know, pick up a history book. That's a lame and an easy way for you to deny that what's going on and what has gone on with people of color is horrible, to try to keep using the flag, the black-on-black crime. You know where a lot of black-on-black crime comes from? It's called proximity and poverty.
Mm-hmm.
When you're fighting over 3 or 4 crumbs, you're going to shoot. Or get into the problem with somebody who's fighting over them same 3 or 4 crumbs you are. Yeah. I don't see that kind of stuff going on in the black families where, you know, people are you know, both parents working, people in the house. You know, cut that nonsense out. You know, I don't want to get into religion or anything like that, but if you listen to religious stories, there were 2 brothers and 1 brother wanted somebody's wife. I mean, what did that have to do with black on black crime? I mean, please, it's so old and tired. I respect you more if you just say, you know what? I don't really care about your struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad at the position that I have, and I'm not trying to give up nothing. I might still want to punch you in the face, but I respect you more. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
all that other stuff and these coded language and all this other nonsense, it's like, please. This country, like Trey said, it was built on murder, genocide, rape, ethnic cleansing. It takes a special kind of a person to not feel some kind of something about that. You understand what I'm saying? Like, no matter what race you are, it takes a special kind of a person to go home, lay their head at night, and be like, you know, I'm good. I don't really care what happened with the rest of anybody else. You know, I mean, I'm not capable of that. I'm sitting in the car right now with my boy, you know, and we both worked at Stevenson High School for years. We work with this youth. You know, the same kind of stuff that you was doing keep alive. We're doing the mentorship. You know, young people, even you put small children together of all races, they will play and they will get along until the adults tell them that they shouldn't, or that this person's bad, or this person's the other. Yeah. That crime in the communities are learned behaviors. You know, a baby is not born and says, yo, I want to pick up that Mac 10 and spray the block. I mean, you know what I mean? That these are things that happen because of life experiences. And, you know, the Constitution, beautiful document. The flag represents, to some people, good stuff, to some people, bad stuff. But there's one thing you got to remember. I love to have the right to bear arms. I'm sure Nat Turner wanted to have the right to bear arms, too. I want to be able to have free speech. But you know what the problem is with all of that? And people, like I said, just be honest. You know when that document was written, it stated that I was 3/5 of a man, so those laws didn't apply to me. Go ahead, man. Just be real about it. All that taking 35 minutes, 16 different sentences that aren't coherent to get to that ending point of, well, you know, I'm biased. Yeah, guess what, buddy? I do know you're biased. Please, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
I got it, Buddha. Thanks for checking in. Join me in welcoming my guest. he had a very, very entertaining article in The Athletic about the NHL and a chance for them to maybe a missed opportunity. It's called NHL and Social Justice. Let's welcome Scott Burnside to 98.7 ESPN. Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thanks for having me aboard tonight.
You're welcome. So, Scott, you're a pretty powerful man. You write this article, and all of a sudden we got 2 days of no hockey.
Well, I'm not sure I can take any credit at all for that. But, no, and I think it's been – you know, it's been a fascinating 24 hours or 30 hours in the life of the National Hockey League. And certainly, I think, an important period of time for the players themselves, because I don't think there's any doubt that there was time last night as we were watching what was happening across the sporting landscape, starting with the NBA teams in Orlando. And it did seem like the NHL seemed ill-prepared for this, that the players seemed... They seemed mystified as to how to proceed. But I do think that they've done a nice job in the intervening time and having discussions amongst themselves within the eight teams that are in the two bubble cities in Toronto and Edmonton. I know they've reached out to players with the Hockey Diversity Alliance, an independent group of players that are formed earlier this summer to focus on systemic racism and intolerance in hockey. So I think there's been a lot of dialogue in the last 24 hours, and you're absolutely right. For the first time in weeks now, there'll be no hockey tonight, no hockey tomorrow night, and I think this is a good opportunity for the players and the teams and their fans to maybe reflect them on the greater issues at play here.
Scott, for those who didn't see the article, once again, it's in The Athletic. The first two paragraphs for me, the first three lines for me were the story. It says 27 seconds. That's how long the NHL felt was appropriate to spend in acknowledging yet another shooting of an unarmed black man in America. Wow. And then you go on to say on the video scoreboard were the words "and racism." And then 27 seconds from that moment, the public address announcer reads the script and we're off and we're playing hockey. How did that affect you so that you point it? That was the major thing that jumped out at you, apparently, right?
Well, yes. And I think that, you know, as we were watching all that was unfolding across the various sports yesterday, I thought, and again, the NHL has, I think they have tried. And you go back to the start of the return to play this summer after the pandemic pause, and Matt Dumba from the Minnesota Wild making a very passionate speech at the very start of the play-in round in Edmonton. We had a couple of nights later, we had a number of players kneeling, Tyler Seguin and Jason Dickinson from Dallas, kneeling alongside Ryan Reeves and Robin Leonard from the Vegas Golden Knights. A real, I think, an important show of solidarity. And then there's, you know, there hasn't been much said since. Okay, the playoffs are going on. But in this moment last night, I think there was an opportunity, and we saw other sports, other athletes sort of organically come together and say, this has got to stop, and the games are not that important right now. And this moment passed. And, you know, for me, the public address announcer wished Jacob Blake and his family well. I mean, no acknowledgement of what had happened to that man in Kenosha, Wisconsin. So I think that was the moment. And I know I wasn't alone. There was a lot of criticism of the league and the players on social media and in other platforms and commentary. And it was a missed opportunity, I think. But again, I think if you're a glass half full person, and especially I think we need that kind of, you know, sort of optimism or thinking, you know, of the positive side of things as opposed to only the negative. I really do think that the NHL and the players over the last 24 hours, I hope they've taken a really important step forward. And I hope that this is a building block and a real learning experience for the players, because it's really important that they understand how important their messages are to not just hockey fans, but to people who watch sports and take their cues on how to behave from professional athletes.
No question about it. Scott Burnside is my guest from The Athletic here on 98.7 ESPN. Scott, let's talk about the Hockey Diversity Alliance and co-leader Evander Kane. from your reporting and talking to guys around the league, how is this working? Is it effective? And where does it need to go to be more effective?
Yeah, I certainly don't speak for the Hockey Diversity Alliance, but I having been in contact and watching how this is unfolding, I think they are absolutely critical to this because they are an independent group. A lot of current players, you mentioned Evander Kane, Matt Dumba, and some former NHL players who, I think of guys like Trevor Daly, Kim Alley, who come with it with a very important breadth of knowledge and experience as black hockey players. And I think the fact that this independent group, they have put some pressure on the NHL to live up to some of the promises that they've made in terms of inclusivity and fighting against racism. I don't think it has moved as quickly as a lot of people would have liked, but I think it is absolutely critical that there is this independent, well-organized, thoughtful, well-spoken group that can apply pressure to the NHL and make sure that they are trending in the right way. And I think even in the last 24 hours, they've shown to be an incredible resource for NHL players who may not know what to do, who may be at a loss to, I believe their hearts are in the right place, but how do they make sure that people understand that that's what they want, that they do care, that they do want to make a difference? Because last night it appeared that they didn't. And I think the Hockey Diversity Alliance is going to prove to be an incredible resource moving forward, not just in terms of the NHL and the structure of the league itself, but also for the players within the league now who might need some guidance, who might say, what should we do? What kinds of things are going to make an impact? What kind of strategy should we be employing to make sure that these aren't just hollow phrases and empty gestures?
It's interesting that you bring that up, Scott, because ultimately that's really what all the athletes are talking about, right? They're all trying to find out what's the best way to use their platform to try to get that change. We had conversations earlier where it looks like the NBA players are really trying to work with the league and the owners to try to help them broker, some conversation and leverage their influence to try to get maybe bills passed or changed for how police brutality is going on or adjustments into how police do their business. And so on the ice, in the NHL, that is the question for them. How do they use their leverage as players in the National Hockey League?
Yeah, and I think it's about a balance and what is the message, what kind of images. I think of even last night, I understand that to turn on a dime and for players to walk away from games that are scheduled, okay, I'm not even sure that was that important, but to have some sort of symbol, I'm thinking about the Mets and the Marlins earlier this evening and a moment of silence and walking away and leaving a Black Lives Matter T-shirt at home plate. That's, to me, I mean, it makes me choked up just talking about it. So it's, to me, it's unfortunate that there couldn't have been a moment where the players could have, found a way to present a unified message, even a brief one last night. But I do think your point is so excellent in terms of beyond talking and what happens in making the game of hockey more inclusive, that's critical. But even more broadly, the more broad landscape that the Hockey Diversity Alliance, my understanding is that they, like some of the other pro teams, are asking NHL owners to perhaps make their buildings available for mass voting, turning them into mass voting sites. So following on the heels of some of the other requests and discussions that other athletes and other sports are having with their owners about how they can work together to make a difference, my sense is that the NHL players are moving toward that kind of discussion, which I think is important too, because you're right. It's about the action after. It's about how you keep carrying this forward and having a lasting impact beyond these the moments where these games are not being played and people are focusing their attention as they should on broader issues of racism and police brutality.
Scott, last question. How should we view the NHL when their statement was, we support the players' decision, before saying we're not going to cancel or postpone games unless the players push to do that? How do we view that? Should we view that as well, maybe you could be a bit more forceful, or should we say, you know what, that's what the NHL is supposed to do. They're not supposed to, they're supposed to be a neutral party in this. If the players want to do that, they make their reaction to the NHL and the NHL will respond.
Yeah, I do think it's more the latter than the former. And I think it's, I mean, to me, it's important that it wasn't Gary Bettman coming down and saying, well, we're not going to play any games. Because we want to focus our attention on the issues that are going on in Wisconsin or wherever. I mean that would have been something. But I do think it's important that this, in some ways, is a grassroots movement from within the players themselves. And again, it's taken some time, maybe too much time for some people. I think that what has happened in the last 24 hours is important because it has come from the players. And I think it's important that the NHL isn't, that they aren't dictating the terms of this. And I think that was important for the league to be able to step back and say, you know, we're not running this show. That it's important that it comes from the players. And even though it took longer than it probably should to get to this point, my sense is very much that the league is in lockstep with this. The league's not opposing it. So I think it's an important distinction that this comes from the players. And I think it's important that these kinds of messages continue to resonate within that player group and push outward from the players, as opposed to being dictated by owners or by league executives.
He does a great job writing for The Athletic. He is Scott Burnside. In this edition, he's chatting about the NHL and social justice. Scott, thanks for a couple of minutes. We'll talk to you down the line as we get closer to the NHL, and maybe we can discuss what's going on the ice, huh?
I'm up for any of that. Call anytime.
All right, Scott, thank you very much. Scott Burnside from The Athletic. Larry Hardesty for Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. Rich Catino is joining me from Citi Field. Hi, Rich. How are you?
Good, Larry. How are you tonight?
I'm all right, thank you. Rich, I got to tell you, I started the show tonight talking about how, as a Met fan, I was a little disappointed that my team was not one of the teams that was taking a stand and supporting the other six who did not play tonight. Then, of course, we had the scenario with the conversation in the open room where there was a mic and an open microphone and apparently a rolling camera, and with some conversations were had and Brody Van Wagenen issued a statement, which I've read on the air, so we've gotten that cleared away. But Rich, kind of take us through the idea of how this came about, that the Mets and Marlins decided that, you know, they needed to come together and sit this game out.
Well, I think it all started, Larry, with the Dominic Smith press conference on Zoom last night. I think it was one of the most heartfelt and emotional and yet honest appraisals of what someone's feeling with all the racial strife going on in the United States, and specifically with the most recent incident that went on that was totally egregious. And I think that, you know, I can tell you this, watching it on Zoom affected me just watching what Dominic was saying. So I can imagine what happened when it got out to the world, and not even the baseball world, but the normal everyday world.
Yeah.
And I think when the team got to the ballpark today, the players wanted to get together and see how they could have better handled this and how they can handle it well on the day they were entering. They also heard from manager Luis Rojas that they had total ability to make the decision, and they'd be backed by the organization throughout the organization, or going all the way to the top of the organization. So at that point, the players decided they didn't want to play the game, but they also wanted to make a statement. And I think, you know, listen, I didn't watch other teams when they boycotted games, whether there was anything on the field, but to take the field, then to leave the field, then to have 42 seconds, it seemed, of silence in honor of not only a great baseball player, but a great American in Jackie Robinson. And then to follow that up with a Black Lives Matter t-shirt at home plate. It was emotional, but it was also direct and to the point. And I think, you know, the NBA made an incredible gesture with what they did to stop playoff games, and the NHL followed suit today. Major League Baseball teams have done their part. I don't know if Rob Manfred's done his part, but I'm going to leave that to people much more intelligent than me to figure out.
Yeah, absolutely. Rich, for those fans who aren't, and people who aren't familiar with Dom Smith, kind of take us through his background and the type of person he is, because he was as emotional as anybody I've seen. And you mentioned heartfelt. He was open and honest. And Rich, he bared his soul. You got a real look into what kind of person he really is last night.
He really did. And I've gotten to know Dom over the last two or three seasons, spending a lot of time with him in spring trainings. And some of those spring trainings, he was supposed to be the guy that hit the job and didn't get the job. And then he was in the background because Pete Alonso was in the foreground. And all you need to know about Dominic Smith as a person is Pete Alonso does not have a bigger ally in that clubhouse than Dominic Smith. And they were fighting for the same position. And that's got to tell you what kind of a person Dominic Smith is. Off the field, he does so much work in the community in this very issue, trying to give African-Americans an equal chance at success. And not just if they're ball players. They may want to be accountants. They may want to be lawyers. They may want to be doctors. And I think the education process and the help at the urban level is something that Dominic Smith really believes in. And when he's seen what has happened in this country in the last 5 to 6 months, it not only hurts him because it's a terrible thing, but it's almost like we take a step backwards. And there's one thing he said last night that really hit home with me. It was at the very beginning of the presser when he said, "I can't believe there's so much hate in the world."
Yeah.
And listen, we know love could spread quickly, but I'll tell you something, Larry, hate spreads far more quickly than love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we see it in this country on an everyday basis. And as a white man, I can't know what it's like to be a black person walking up the street. I'll never know what that feels like. But hearing some things from Dominic about his past gave me a small little slice of an idea of what it might be. And I think that, you know, now you add on the other thing that's going on in the world where not only do they have to worry about what people think about a black person when they walk up the street, they got to worry if a white police officer is going to take his life.
Yeah.
And those are real, real concerns. But this is the thing, Larry. They need to be real concerns for every person in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, there's no white or black in this issue. To me, there's right and wrong. And I think Dominic sent that message last night in how he talked about all of that. And I don't know what the solutions are, and I don't think anybody does. But I do know that you have to get everyone in a room to discuss it. And one of the things today that I thought when I saw what went on the field tonight is that it was the last time I saw something like that made me think baseball could have an impact on changing things in life was the night of 9/11 when the Mets and Braves, two hated teams that night, mm-hmm. stood and shook each other's hands. And, you know, knowing that the country was in duress. And this country right now has two foes, COVID and racism. And they're similar in the standpoint of they're both deadly forces in this country that could kill people.
Yeah.
And they can only be, you can only fight it if you have every person's help. Mm-hmm. And in the COVID world, it's wear a mask, socially distant, follow rules. In the world of racism, it's shutting your mouth and ignoring it makes you part of the problem. And I think that's the thing that came through to me in Dominic's presser and in what I saw on the field here tonight. It's a simple issue, Larry. You're either mm-hmm. part of the problem or part of the solution, and there's no gray area.
You're right. That's for sure. Rich Catino covers the Mets for us, and, of course, New York Extra is my guest. You're listening to Carlin. Larry Hartsey filling in for Chris here on 98.7 ESPN. Rich, let's talk on the field real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Mets have a interesting series now with the Yankees this weekend, a couple of doubleheaders on Friday and Sunday, single game on Saturday. Both teams actually come into this kind of limping a little bit, Yankees more than the Mets. But coming into this, you mentioned when we last chatted that this was an important 14 days for this Met team. Where do they stand now going in after getting a win over the Marlins, which was much needed. But where do they stand going into this weekend and then going into next week?
Well, it's a very important stretch for them, but whoever thought we'd have a five-game series with the Mets and Yankees and Jacob deGrom, Mr. Hiro Tanaka, or Gerrit Cole wouldn't pitch in any of the games.
Yes, amazing, isn't it?
That is amazing. And then the Yankees, of course, have some other injuries, too, when Aaron Judge and DJ LeMahieu, et cetera. I think it's important for the Mets to withstand this weekend. It would be nice if they could take 3 out of 5 from the Yankees. And then they get into – they have a day off on Monday, and there's talk that that could be when the Marlins and Mets make up this game that they missed tonight. Mm-hmm. But I think that has to be figured out by MLB. But then the Mets go to Baltimore, and then you're in the last month of your season.
Yeah,
I know it's hard to think of that right now because we feel like the season just started, but you're in the last month of your season. And it's a little different for the Mets right now because you don't necessarily have to win the division or get that first wild card. You have to finish one of the top two spots in your division. Mm-hmm. And right now they're in arm's length of the Marlins, and they're 4 games in the loss column back of the Braves. So I think 4 games in the loss column is a lot to make up with what the amount of games that are left. So you focus on trying to get to second place in your division so you get that automatic playoff spot and then have to worry about the Pythagorean theorem known as those two wild cards after, you know, all the two division teams are sealed up. I think to do that, the Mets are going to have to win 60% of their games from here on in, you know, 6 out of every 10. And I think if they do that, they'll have a very good chance at the playoffs. But if they lose a lot of games this weekend, that's going to put them behind the eight ball and reaching that number. So not only is this Mets-Yankees series important for, you know, bragging rights for the fans or whatever, but it is important to win these games. And the Mets have to go into Yankee Stadium hoping their left-handed bats could take advantage of that little minor league right field wall we see at Yankee Stadium. And the other part of it is, you know, hopefully their starting pitchers can give them 5 or 6 innings so the bullpen doesn't get, you know, rinsed out with all the appearances they'll have to make this weekend. And then they got to go to Baltimore, take care of a team they're better than, and take care of a couple of games there and just keep it going. But really, I think from here on in, 6 out of every 10 games in the win column is a must for the Mets.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I don't know how doable that is, but we'll see. Because down the line, Rich, you don't know if they end up with more doubleheaders that they have to play. That's the wild card here.
It is. You know, I always think with Jacob deGrom, if you have a lot of doubleheaders, if you could pitch in one of the doubleheaders and maybe get a 7-inning complete game win, it's a huge advantage. Unfortunately, they didn't pitch him in the doubleheader this week. I don't know why that occurred. But they pitched him in the single game, and he misses the Yankee game. If he would have pitched Tuesday in one of the doubleheader games, who knows what would have happened. But you know he would have pitched again in Yankee Stadium. Mets decided not to go that route. They decided to pitch him with the extra day of rest on Wednesday. And looking back, I think I might have played that a little differently if I were Luis Rojas.
Yeah, I hear you. Rich, thanks for the great work. As always, we'll talk soon, my friend.
You got it, my friend. Stay well.
All right, that's Rich Catino at Citi Field bringing us up to date on the idea of led up to the cancellation or postponement of tonight's game between the Mets and Marlins, 1 of 7 canceled in Major League Baseball today. And now we turn our attention to the New York Yankees, a team that's been really struggling with injuries and offense and a big-name pitcher who is not actually living up to what they want him to do, even though it's early. Christy Ackard, who covers the Yankees for the Daily News, is my guest, and we'll talk about that with her. Hi, Christy. How are you?
I'm good, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. Christy, it's interesting because there's been when we talked about Gerrit Cole, right, and we talked about what he is going to be for the postseason, because obviously, really, that's why he's here, is what he brings to the table in the postseason. But as a stopper, as the ace, there's moments in the regular season where you need him to really be that guy that stops a losing streak. In not this past outing yesterday, the outing before, he was a guy. Listen, he did his job. He only gave up a couple of runs. Yankees just didn't score. Yesterday was a little different in Atlanta. He gave up a couple of home runs. And so this is not the Gerrit Cole we're familiar with. And I suspect some Yankee fans are a little disappointed in the young man right now.
I'm sure they are. I mean, that's why he was brought in, you know, to pitch those games that they need to win. And they needed to win yesterday. You know, I will say that I think it's a hard season. He seems to be a very particular pitcher. and to be off of his normal routine and never really being in a routine has been hard on all the starters. But if you watched him yesterday, he really labored. I mean, he had good stuff, but if you watch the Braves really made him work. I don't think I remember seeing him having innings of 26 pitches, you know, in the outings before. And he did yesterday. So he was really laboring yesterday.
Christy, this is a Yankee team that's facing a lot of doubleheaders, including two this weekend with the Mets. And pitching is always an issue. And you're looking at some starters that are, you know, struggling. And you've got a scenario where this weekend in five games, no Gerrit Cole, no Masahiro Tanaka, Jay Happ and crew. I mean, this is going to be interesting.
Well, it's going to be interesting on those other games because besides Jay Happ and Jordan Montgomery, you know, they've got three games to get starting picture, you know, get innings out of. Now they're seven inning games, but you know, they're going to use Michael King in one, and he's a good young pitcher who's, you know, really kind of making his way. They're going to have a bullpen game. And then what do they do with the other game? Do they bring up a Devi Garcia? I know Yankees fans would love to see Clark Schmidt, but, you know, it sounded like today that's not going to be the obvious choice. You know, with James Paxton not only going on the injured list, but he hasn't been the number two that they expected him to be. They're kind of in a bind here for pitching.
Isn't that ironic? And it's always funny, Christy, because when you talk at the beginning of the season, oh, the pitching is so deep. Starters are deep. Bullpen is deep. It only takes a couple of injuries, right, to just screw everything up.
Well, and the Yankees have certainly had their fair share of injuries. Let's be fair. I mean, let's remember they're also without Luis Severino. You know, Domingo Germán is not with them because of his domestic violence incident. Mm-hmm. And they probably were prepared to have him back midway through the season before the whole, you know, coronavirus pandemic happened. You know, yeah, as they went into the offseason trying to address that by getting Cole and signing him to this, you know, record-setting deal. And now they find themselves in need of pitching for this weekend. And even more importantly, they have the Rays on Monday.
Yeah. Oh, no, not the Rays.
Oh, yeah, the Rays. And they haven't even faced the Blue Jays yet, who are proving to be a scrappy, exciting little team.
You know, it's funny, and we're talking to Christy Ackert of the Daily News, covers the Yankees here on Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. Hardesty in for Chris. It's so fascinating because you just thought, listen, with this Yankee lineup, they're going to score. I mean, okay, even if Cole has a bad game, I mean, this team's going to score 6-7 runs. It'll be okay. And then once again, it's a replay of 2019 with this team, injury after injury after injury. And Christy, the concern if you're a Yankee fan is, listen, you love Aaron Judge, but can he stay on the field?
That's obviously a concern. You know, I switched over to the Yankees from the Mets midway through the 2018 season. My very first day, he fractured his wrist. And I feel like ever since that day, I've written about him either being healthy or not. That's been the main focus. And it's been tough for him. It's certainly an issue that he feels very strongly about. I mean, there's no doubt that he wants to be on that field. I mean, he argued with them to keep him off the IL the last time. But, you know, if you're looking at him in the long term, and pretty soon they're going to have to start thinking about whether to extend him or not, that's got to factor into it.
Definitely does. It really does. Let's talk about some of the other injuries. Listen, Gleyber Torres, even though he was struggling a little bit at the plate and had some issues defensively, listen, with all due respect to the people that are in the lineup and helped them last year and will help them this year, is no substitute for the folks that they're missing. And they really miss Gleyber Torres.
They really do. I mean, that's another dangerous at bat that you can put in the cleanup spot, number three. He may be struggling, but other teams are afraid of his bat. Aaron Boone said today that, you know, he was running today, and it's he's likely to be back within that 2 to 3 week time frame that they originally projected, which is good. And they have some more good news. And I actually think the person they missed the most in that lineup is DJ LeMahieu.
I agree.
Because he is the engine that keeps that offense running. You know, I can't tell you how many times he comes up to bat with two outs and he keeps it alive for, you know, usually Aaron Judge in the two hole. You know, they miss him a lot.
You know, it's funny. He is probably, we talk about the Stantons and the Judges, and rightfully so, but he might be the most indispensable Yankee right now.
You know, I thought last year he was their MVP. Mm-hmm. And, he does the little things that keeps the offense running. He does the little things in terms of, you know, moving around in defense so that, you know, Aaron Boone can have some flexibility with that lineup. I think you're seeing it now. I he never went on the DL last year. He was one of, I think, well, he wasn't in the opening day lineup, but he was one of the very few players that didn't go on the DL last year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's how they were able to kind of maintain with, you know, the next man up my attitude, because you still had that elite guy there. And now without him, I think you're seeing how invaluable he is to that lineup.
No question. Two more for you, Christy. I know when you go through your mailbag and every once in a while you're answering questions from fans, Gary Sanchez has got to be, if not number one, probably number in the top three of your mailbag, because he's a guy that, you know, you love him. The power's there. The average has been awful. The catching and the defense rears its ugly head at the worst possible times. I mean, this is a guy who can't seem to get out of his own way.
You know, Gary is actually, I love catchers. I love talking to catchers. I'm fascinated by catching. So I've watched him a lot, and he struggles with certain things. There's no doubt about it. You know, pass balls and blocking balls are something that fans go wild over. The problem is that analytically, front offices don't care about that. They care much more about framing pitches, because there's more opportunity to make a difference if you frame the pitch well. So they're having him focus on that. And then every other year it seems like, oh, well, we'll have him focus on blocking too. So I think it's very hard on him. And I will say this, because I hear that people don't believe this. He's a very hardworking player. You know, you watched his Instagram over, it's not, you know, Aroldis Chapman working out every day, but it's him working on his skills. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, he is clearly perhaps the most frustrating player for Yankee fans, and I understand why. But, you know, I think with catchers across the league, one, you're getting all these relievers who throw, you know, 100 miles an hour, 98 miles an hour. You've got Zach Britton, whose ball sinks incredibly. They're throwing from different arm slots, and he's, you know, he's put in a position where he needs to be great almost every night, and maybe that he's not great, but he certainly catches a lot of flack for it.
He does. He really does. Christy, is this team going to make a big swing for the trade deadline? Are they in looking for an arm? Are we really going to see Clevinger and Francisco Lindor in this lineup?
I wish I could tell you yes or no, but I think the thing that you always know about the Yankees, and what you hear when you are trying to find that out, is that they're doing their due diligence. They're certainly asking, you know, and sniffing out any potential, you know, places that they can make a good deal. I think the one thing you're going to hear this year from every team is nobody's going to give up prospects for rentals on a short season. The Yankees have had a pretty good track record, though, of going out and getting good deals at the deadline. Say what you want about Jay Happ right now, but he made an impact in 2018. Zach Britton certainly pitched well for them at that time. Luke Voit was probably one of their most underrated, you know, deadline trades. So it wouldn't surprise me if they make a move that's impactful, whether it's a big name or not. I tend to doubt we're going to see that many big names traded this trade deadline.
Yeah. I agree with you. But it's always interesting when it's the Yankees, because you never know. You just never
know. That's right.
And you'll be all over it, as you always are. Thanks, Christy. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Larry.
All right. That's Christy Ackert from The Daily News, covers the Yankees for us.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.